This week on Hack Naked News, Security World hits Las Vegas, as if you didn't know that already. Hackers causing havoc by owning irrigation control systems. Linux vulnerability can lead to distributed denial of service attacks. Hack causes pacemakers to cause life-threatening shocks. And malicious fax machines leave firms open to attack. All that and more coming on this episode of Hack Naked News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News.
The breach was huge news at the time.
Linux monitoring tool.
List of affected devices. You can check out the link in the show notes.
Ars Technica is reporting that hackers have cracked the Nintendo Switch this week.
Tracking people's locations and stuff like that.
You'll want to be rolling out updates if you're using Lenovo hardware. Do you have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending your assets? Have you penetration tested your public assets? Start 2018 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hack Naked News, episode number 184, coming to you live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island. My name is Jason Wood. I'm standing in for Paul Asadorian today as he's out feeling a little beat up from a week out in Vegas at Black Hat and DEF CON. One quick announcement this week. Thursday, actually, we have a webcast with Endgame. It'll be held on August 16th at 3 to 4 p.m. I'm assuming that's Eastern time, on phishing prevention. Eastern time. So go to securityweekly.com/endgame to register now. All right. So this week's security news, we are in the post Black Hat and DEF CON episode of Hack Naked News for sure. The first article came from the Register. Security World hit Las Vegas for a week of hacking, cracking, and fun. So unless you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, you probably noticed that the Hacker Summer Camp, aka Black Hat, DEF CON, and Security besides Las Vegas, has spent a week out in Vegas and just wrapped up this weekend. The Register reported on the background of the Black Hat and DEF CON conferences, and covered some of the more memorable talks and events that that had been presented at the conferences over the years. Of course, no article would be complete on the conferences without referencing the risk of getting hacked yourself, as they talk about some of the most hostile networks in the world when you're sitting on the DEF CON network. No surprise there for any of the attendees. Next, hackers could cause havoc by owning internet-connected irrigation systems. IoT sprinkler systems could drain cities dry of water? Well, perhaps not. An academic study was released by Ben Nassi, a PhD student at Ben-Gurion University in Israel. And he highlights the fact that many of the IoT irrigation controllers that are available, for consumers to use and pick up are vulnerable to a number of attacks that we would find in really older attacks that are pretty well known and understood. And basically how these systems could be attacked, and somebody could turn on all the sprinklers, I guess, if they drove around through the city in a town. The weaknesses definitely sound real, but like I said, they're well known already, kind of old hacks. But his comments about draining a city dry of water seems a little bit unlikely. If nothing else, I'd go outside and turn off my stupid sprinklers. Linux vulnerability could lead to distributed denial of service attacks. A vulnerability in Linux kernel 4.9 and up could result in a denial of service attack on any Linux box with an available TCP port. Being quoted here from the article, Linux kernel versions 4.9 plus can be forced to make very expensive calls to TCP underscore collapse underscore OFO underscore Q and TCP underscore prune underscore OFO underscore Q for every incoming packet, which can lead to a denial of service, the report states. An attacker can induce a denial of service condition by sending specially modified packets with ongoing TCP sessions. Because the attack is maintaining an existing TCP maintaining a continuous TCP connection, it's not going to be possible for the attacker to spoof their addresses or their IP addresses. So there will be some indication there where these folks are at, but it's something to keep an eye out when patches become available for us to deploy to our systems. Hack causes pacemakers to deliver life-threatening shocks. Billy Rios and Jonathan Butts released information about vulnerabilities in Medtronic pacemakers last week at Black Hat. Turns out the pacemakers do not use any encryption in transit and don't do any code signing of firmware updates, which enabled the researchers to install their own firmware on the devices. Apparently, the vendor doesn't sound too worried about the attack due to, and they quote, existing controls, which mitigate these issues. However, the researchers disagree about the effectiveness of this control, these controls, and expressed their concern about the health of the individuals using these devices. And I know at least one person who has expressed some of their frustration with the vendor because they actually have one of these Medtronic pacemakers implanted in them. So hopefully that will change and we'll get some better updates on these type of devices. Malicious fax machines leave firms open to attack. Researchers at DEF CON released information on the security, or the complete lack of it, on fax machines. Now, the issue is that, obviously, that fax machines are very old technology, and the protocols were defined quite some time back in the 1980s, and they haven't really been updated since then. Now, these devices are frequently connected to the internal network of organizations, as they also act as printers and other functions, scanners and things like that. As a result, an attacker, according to the researchers released at DEF CON, could basically use the old fax protocols to remotely compromise the fax machine and gain an internal foothold on the internal network of an organization. Now, at this point, there's no indication that that this is being actively abused, but something to keep a watch out on. Pretty much every place I've worked at has had a fax machine hanging around somewhere in it. macOS vulnerability paves the way for system compromise with a single click. Now, the march of vulnerabilities coming out of DEF CON and Black Hat are continuing. Patrick Wardle, Chief Research Officer at Digitas Security, released his results of looking at synthetic events in macOS at DEF CON last week. So we're all pretty used to taking some kind of action on our macOS systems and getting prompted to provide credentials or authorize some kind of change. You know, do you want to install this app you download from the internet, for example? And we have to authorize that for the action to take place. A synthetic event is actually where software is able to get in and perform that authorization without the user being involved. Some of the prompts that could fall into this the category of synthetic events are accessing the keychain, running an untrusted app, or installing a third-party kernel extension. The CVE related to these issues is CVE-2017-7150, and we'll wait to see when updates come out for macOS to address this issue. Police body cameras are open to attack. It turns out that even police body cameras are vulnerable to attack remotely. These cameras are pretty well deployed now throughout the United States and have proved that police officers have both acted properly and improperly in different events. And these things are admissible as evidence in court. And as a result, they're fairly sensitive devices. Josh Mitchell, a consultant at security firm Nuix, has found that attackers can take control of these cameras and potentially tamper with evidence. It turns out they're running Wi-Fi networks or Wi-Fi connections on them. A number of the models of these devices that are deployed and in use by police departments are vulnerable to an attacker connecting remotely, downloading videos from the cameras. They can also delete videos from the camera and potentially download a video, modify it, and then re-upload it to the camera to be essentially tampering with evidence. How is this happening? Well, we're back to some well-known old weaknesses. Basically, lack of encryption, and it turns out default credentials are in play for these flaws. So go figure. Our police officers are walking around, and they probably don't even know it, broadcasting Wi-Fi signals and are running servers on their body cameras. ThreatList released an article saying almost all security pros believe election systems are vulnerable, are at risk. A poll taken by security vendor Venafi found that 93% of security professionals have some level of concern about cyber attacks against voting systems. The poll was not limited, is important to note, not limited to just the United States, but also included the United Kingdom and Australia. So concern in multiple countries about the security of these systems. And as we've seen in some of the news, heard about things like potential, remote backdoors being installed on by the vendor on these devices for remote management. It definitely doesn't settle anybody down. No doubt that last week's voting village at DEF CON has also decreased everybody's confidence in the security of these systems. Adobe releases important patches for its four of its popular software applications. Adobe has released August round of patches to download and install. The products affected in this round of patchy are Adobe Flash Player, Creative Cloud Desktop Application, Adobe Experience Manager, Adobe Acrobat, and Reader. Some of the issues included things like arbitrary code execution in Adobe Acrobat and Reader. There were some cross-site scripting issues in Adobe Experience Manager, I believe. So it is time to go back and start patching again and get our Adobe applications back up to date. Or if we could get away with it, we can just ditch these things like Flash Player and get them out of our environment. And finally, researchers break IPsec VPN connections with a 20-year-old protocol flaw. ThreatPost is reporting that a new Bleichenbacher Oracle cryptographic attack has been set loose on the world using a 20-year-old protocol flaw to compromise the Internet Key Exchange, IKE, protocol, and to use to secure IP communications. The research actually comes from an academic paper that was released by researchers from Ruhr University in Bochum, Germany, and the University of Opole in Poland. Now, their proof of concept attack only affects phase one in IKAV1 and IKAV2 connections, basically where an attacker is able to impersonate an IKE device. Both Cisco and Huawei have released updates for these vulnerabilities, and those were released yesterday. So as we're going out and patching our Adobe products, don't forget to patch your network equipment as well. All right, so that is the security news for August 14th. We're going to take a short break and come back with a pre-recorded interview with Matt Alderman to wrap up this week's episode of Hack Naked News.
Today's determined attackers easily bypass even the most advanced network defenses. Trying to ramp up staff to detect their backdoors can cost thousands of dollars and take months, even years. With Active Countermeasures AI Hunter, we enable junior analysts to detect even the most advanced backdoors in a matter of hours. Sign up for a demo and purchase our product today by visiting activecountermeasures.com/HNN. Active Countermeasures, make every analyst a hunter.
Welcome to Security Weekly. We're recording live at DEF CON 26. We're down at the Pool Cabanas at Caesars. With me today is Torin Sandel with Styra. My name's Matt Alderman, and we're going to talk about the Open Policy Agent today. So, welcome, Torin.
Thanks, Matt.
So, You're the co-founder of an open source project called Open Policy Agent. Can you give everybody kind of an overview, start with a kind of the vision for OPA and kind of what you guys built in this Open Policy Agent for the open source?
Sure, yeah. So my name's Torin. I'm the co-founder of the Open Policy Agent project. I'm sort of the tech lead right now as well. So I drive a lot of the technical direction on the project. And the goal that we had with the project from the very beginning was to kind of empower administrators with more kind of control and flexibility over the software that they run. So whether you're talking about microservices or, you know, cloud infrastructure or host level infrastructure, we created OPA to give them more control and flexibility over the software. And so what that means concretely is that you can basically take OPA and you can use it as a building block or as a library to offload policy decisions from different services. So for example, if you're working with, you know, microservices, you can offload API authorization policies.
Right.
If you're working with SSH, you want to be able to control who can log into a machine, right? Who can run sudo commands. If you're talking about Kubernetes, then you care about the workloads that are being deployed. All of these things have policies that apply to them, and OPA helps you enforce those and get better visibility over the policies that you have in your system.
Got it. So OPA is, it's not necessarily a replacement for some of the existing identity solutions out there. Is it it kind of augments it?
Yeah.
Because we've got these new technologies, right? We've got containers and Kubernetes and all the way we're building apps mm-hmm. now. And I think some of the legacy systems have some limitations, I think, and OPA kind of helps to augment some of that? Is that kind of where the problem statement starts?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of the time, people don't even have a policy system in place, right? So they just hard code policies into their business logic, right? The problem there is that it becomes very difficult to understand what policies are in place, to change them over time, to manage them, and so on. If they do have some kind of basic identity authorization policy system in place, then it may work for, you know, 50% of the use cases they have, but there's always this long tail of use cases that pops up when you're operating large, complex systems. And so OPA kind of exists to be able to give administrators control over that long tail of use cases. So it's much more fine-grained control over a variety of different systems.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so really the problem statement here is got new technologies, how do you control authorization to those new technologies?
Yep.
And OPA is a component that can help you actually do that.
Yeah. So we OPA's open source. Anybody can take it. They can use it. Security practitioners really like it. System architects really like it because it's a building block they can use at different parts of their stack. Right. You can use it in any system at any layer, basically.
So give me a technology kind of overview. What is OPA? Oh, it says Open Policy Agent. Is it an agent? Is it a library? Is it a binary?
That's a good question. Yeah.
All of the above.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. An agent's just something that does something for you, right? So it's really general, right? But yeah, you need to like ground that at some point.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So we just say it's a reusable building block, and because you can use it as a library or you can use it as a daemon, it doesn't really matter like which way you use it. It's kind of doing the same thing for you. And what it's doing is it's helping you offload policy decisions, authorization decisions, for example, from your service, from your software, so that decision is not hard-coded inside that software, so that your administrators have control over it, and so that they can just look at the policy separate from the software, from the service,
right,
and say, like, this is who should be allowed to access the system, right? You don't want to have that kind of logic deeply embedded inside of your system.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then is the Open Policy Agent report back up to something more centralized, or does it have to get integrated into existing systems?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So OPA enables sort of distributed policy enforcement. So it allows you to enforce policy at the edge next to your service, right? That's one of the goals of the project, was to basically use it as a library where all the decisions are made locally. It doesn't have to call out to any kind of remote system in order to make decisions. That's like a core architectural decision we made. But it does give you the APIs that you need to hook it up to a control plane so that you can manage it centrally. Like, what you really want is, you know, distributed enforcement so that you have low latency and high availability. But then you also want to be able to manage things centrally, right? Because if you've got all these agents running everywhere, like, how the heck do you manage them?
Right, you got to manage them.
You need a place to manage
them. Right, you also want that data back so you can do some level of reporting and auditing.
Exactly.
And, right.
Yeah. So it gives you the API. It gives you the APIs to
do it.
Yeah,
right.
So that's what people take advantage of. That's what people are really doing when they integrate OPA into their systems. So
the
integration that you do initially to just enforce policies is very simple. It's like one API call that you make, say, is this thing allowed?
Okay.
Right? And you just give it a bunch of data, and it just figures out yes or no, or sends that back. But then after you've done that, you want to hook it up to your monitoring system, you want to hook it up to your provisioning system, you want to hook it up to all these audit, you know, and so on, right?
Right.
And so that's where those management APIs come into play.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So customer deploys OPA. Where's the value prop for them? So I like to talk about value a little bit because I think customers buy value. With open source, it's sometimes a little different. We'll talk some use cases, I think, in a little bit. But, you know, where's the value of leveraging something like OPA? What does it really provide to the customer?
So OPA gives, it provides value to different people in the organization, and it really depends on what your role is in the organization. So architects really value OPA because it gives them sort of a single unified way of enforcing policy throughout their system, right? They can think of policy enforcement in this one kind of framework, in this one language, with this one API throughout their system. So they have like uniformity. It simplifies system architecture.
Right, okay.
From an operator's point of view, OPA is great because it gives them finer grain control over like authorization decisions, admission control decisions, risk management, and so on, right? And it's control that they can tweak and change over time without having to do a full release cycle of the application or the service that's being policy enabled by OPA.
Right.
Right? And then it also helps with visibility a little bit because you've decoupled the policy decision. It's not hard-coded in the application anymore.
Right.
It's separate. And so if you want to know like who has access to the system, you can just look at the policy. You don't have to learn like Ruby or Python or Java or whatever the thing is.
Right, to pull all that data
right?
back.
Or if you're in a big organization, you have to learn all five of languages, right, in order to answer just a simple question like who can do what.
Especially in a container
microservice-based
world.
Right? Yeah. So for architects, it's about unifying policy. For ops, it's about flexibility, control, and visibility. And then for developers, it's basically about reducing time to market, effectively, right? Every single piece of software that you sell to an enterprise has to have authorization in it, right? Like if you don't have authorization, the product manager is going to be like, banging down your door, right?
Right.
So OPA gives, developers a building block that like something that they can just use off the shelf to add authorization into their service.
And kind of build it in a consistent way into their application architecture, regardless of deployment, regardless of language.
Exactly.
It gives them that central component to do so they don't have to figure it out for all the different
And it's open source, right? So it's, it's open source. As of earlier this year, we joined the CNCF, the Cloud Native Compute Foundation, which is part of the Linux Foundation.
Yep.
So it's an open effort, and it's been open source since the very beginning, right? Since day one, it's been open source. So it's not proprietary, right? There's no,
Right. And the community is contributing back into that as well. You're obviously heading up a lot of that contribution work yourself with Sierra. All right, so let's talk some use cases, because I think it's interesting to talk through a couple of the ways people are using OPA to actually solve real-world customer problems.
Thank you for watching this interview from Las Vegas. If you want to watch and learn more, go to securityweekly.com/summercamp18 or go to our YouTube channel, Security Weekly, to view the playlist.